Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. If you've just joined us, welcome to Radio Islam International. Welcome to the program Family Health Matters. I'm your host, Sister Zeenat. The time right now is 10 minutes past 2, alhamdulillah. Well, first up this afternoon, as usual, is health news. And in health news today, we look at promoting health, rather heart health, inshallah. And that will be followed by our regular monthly program with the Lanesha Clinic's community-based rehabilitation services team. And that is our occupational therapist, Sister Nazreen Hassan, the physiotherapist, Brother Mohammed Abu Bakr Reis, and the audiologist and speech therapist, Raisa Mullah, from the Lanesha Clinic, inshallah. This afternoon, we're going to be looking at a few things. We want to talk about hydrotherapy, and it was mentioned in our last program. We also want to talk a little about cerebral palsy, and we're going to talk about the outreach programs and some of the specific activities at these outreaches, inshallah. Right, so back with our health news. It's all about promoting heart health. Now, heart disease is a leading cause of death, everywhere, not only in the U.S., but it's a leading cause of death for smokers as well. And cigarette smoking is directly linked to about 30% of all heart disease deaths in the United States each year. And I'm sure that's very common throughout the year. We can everywhere, wherever you see people smoking. And I just don't know how to get people to understand how dangerous it is to smoke, or how bad it is rather to smoke. Well, the bottom line is that smoking is hard on the heart, hard on the heart. Now, I'm going to just share with you a few tips to prevent heart disease today. And the first one is, I can't stress on this, enough. It's quit smoking. Now, because cigarette smoking is so prevalent and destructive, it has been identified as the single most preventable cause of disease and a premature death in everybody. Smoking increases the risk of cardiovascular disease, peripheral vascular disease, and also coronary heart disease. And for people with a history of coronary heart disease, cigarette smoking is also a risk factor for sudden cardiac health, or cardiac death rather. Now, you can always read up more about smoking and heart disease. I'm just going to basically give you a few basics. Now, the second point, which is very important too, is, and I think it affects many of us, watch your waistline. The risk to heart health that are associated with obesity include heart attacks, heart failure, cardiovascular disease, and coronary heart disease, along with a whole host of other negative health effects. You should try and choose a balanced diet that is low in saturated fat and also high in lean protein, fruits and vegetables, healthy oils, and whole unprocessed grains. You need to be good to your heart by maintaining the proper weight for your age and your body type. It's easier said than done. I know many of us, try very hard to lose that weight, but it's very difficult. Anyway, we should always continue trying and never give up. Then, another very important point is exercise. And, it's stressed so much. Everybody says, keep moving. Please do exercise. As little as half an hour of exercise daily can protect your heart. Aerobic activities such as walking, running and swimming work the heart, and it also helps keep it robust. In other words, you don't really need to go to a gym or become a member of a gym. You can do all these exercises, at home. You can just get up in the morning and take a walk, a little bit in the evening, a little bit. You can actually, you don't have to do it at one go. You can, just break it up. Do a little at a time. But the whole idea is to keep moving. As we all know, we are all very busy and we all have very hectic lifestyles, and fitting in a daily workout can be an overwhelming thought. However, it's important to remember that exercise doesn't have to be done all at once to be beneficial. They say take a couple of short walks a day and use the stairs whenever possible. And we can all fit in about 10 minutes here and 15 minutes there to move our bodies if we make it a priority. I think, you know, we need to embrace the challenge and think of exercise as a gift, not a chore. And in a very real way, that's just what it is, a gift for your heart. I think we all need to think about that one. So, one of them, it's just that I don't know why we don't want to do exercises, but if we can change our way of thinking, maybe inshallah it will become easier for us. Then to watch your cholesterol. The toxins in tobacco smoke lower a person's high density lipoprotein cholesterol, that's the HDL or the good cholesterol, while raising levels of low density lipoprotein cholesterol, that's the LDL or the bad cholesterol. Now, a high level of LDL in the blood is a significant risk factor for atherosclerosis, also known as hardening of the arteries. And other factors that influence cholesterol are genetics and eating a diet rich in saturated fats and trans fats. If it's been a year or more since your last cholesterol check, then call your doctor and schedule an appointment. And if your cholesterol is high, there are steps that you can take to control it. And then the fifth point, and the most, also one of the very important ones, is to maintain normal blood pressure. Now, while at the doctor's office getting your cholesterol checked, have your blood pressure checked also. And, you know, actually it's very easy these days. You just go to a chemist or anywhere. Your blood pressure can be checked very easily. In fact, so many people at home have blood pressure machines, so you can just do it at home. Maintaining a healthy blood pressure reduces the risk of heart attack, stroke, and heart failure. High blood pressure is considered to be anything over 140 for systolic blood pressure and 90 for diastolic blood pressure. Now, I think that is just commonly, you know, for us, I know they always say it's 120 over 80. I'm not sure if that is correct. Please check with your doctor. But, you know, just make sure that you know what you are doing. Now, if yours is high, take it seriously and follow your doctor's recommendations. And finally, when you quit smoking, other risk factors for heart disease will obviously diminish as well. Smokers usually exercise less, and the reason for that is they, as they get older and the lung function becomes impaired, that inactivity in turn often leads to weight gain. Cigarette smoke also increases bad cholesterol, and while smoking, it won't cause high blood pressure. If a smoker has hypertension, smoking can increase the risk of malignant hypertension, a dangerous form of high blood pressure. Now, if you are still smoking, I urge you to make the commitment to quit now. I'm asking you out there, please try and stop smoking. Every cigarette smoke causes additional stress and damage to your body, and it won't get any easier to stop the longer you wait. Now, there are many who spent years fervently wishing that they could find the right combination of motivation and guts to leave smoking behind or leave it for good. But one important lesson for smokers to learn is that for a nicotine addict, there is no ideal time to quit. Don't believe the fallacy that you'll stop smoking when you're ready. You could die waiting for that day to come. You know, we all think, okay, tomorrow, sometimes tomorrow never comes. The truth is, addiction creates a fear of quitting that is hard to overcome, regardless of when we decide to stop smoking. But overcome it, you can, as long as you take that all-important first step and put the cigarettes down. From there, you'll find that with support, education, and the patience to work, you quit program one simple day at a time. You can defeat that fear, and you can conquer nicotine addiction once and for all, inshallah. And I fervently make dua for all those people out there, you know, if you are smoking, please do stop smoking. At least make an effort and don't wait for tomorrow, like they say. Just do it today. Decide and that's it, inshallah. Well, when we return, we'll be talking to the Lanesha Clinic's community-based rehabilitation services team, inshallah. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a few moments. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. If you have just joined us, welcome back to the program from Family Health Matters. I'm your sister Zinat, and joining me in the studio today, and I have a full house here, alhamdulillah, is the Lanesha Clinic's Community-Based Rehabilitation Services. It's the team here, the occupational therapist, Sister Nazreen Hassan, who is the sub-district coordinator, Cluster B, Stratford, Lanesha South and Lanesha Clinics. And we have the physiotherapist, Brother Mohammed Abubakar Rees, from the Lanesha Clinic. We have the audiologist and speech therapist, Sister Raisa Mullah, from the Lanesha Clinic. And we also have Melanie sitting in today with us, who is an occupational therapist, alhamdulillah. Thank you so much for joining us too. And to all of you, assalamu alaikum and jazakallahu khair for being here with me today.
Alaykum assalam.
Okay, now this afternoon we're going to be talking to the physio first, our physiotherapist first, and we're going to be discussing hydrotherapy. We'll go on to the occupational therapist, and with her we'll be talking about cerebral palsy, and now to the speech and audiologist, Raisa Mullah. We're going to be talking about the outreach programs, inshallah, that the Lanesha Clinic's community-based rehabilitation services have for us in our area, inshallah. A reminder to our listeners, if you have any questions or concerns, please do feel free to contact us. The number to dial is 011-854-1548. And the SMS number or the WhatsApp number is 082-8492-786 with any of your questions, inshallah. Okay, so Brother Abubakar, we'll start off with you today, inshallah.
Ameen.
Now, I know in our last program, we did mention all the different therapies that you know, a physiotherapist normally does, and you know what they have available at the Lanesha Clinic, and one of them was hydrotherapy. Now, maybe you can just explain to us exactly what, you know, if you talk hydrotherapy, I just think of water, maybe the swimming pool, but please tell us, what is hydrotherapy all about?
Well, just by definition, water is a good start, maybe 50% of the way. Hydrotherapy is literally just exercise in the water. So we use certain properties of the water to make the exercise easier, more beneficial for the patient. So hydrotherapy is literally just the use of exercise within a pool.
Mm-hmm. And obviously, taking if it's in a pool, you know, I want to know this because I feel, you know, a person having a problem wouldn't want to jump into a cold pool. So does the temperature of the water, you know, does it play a role in any way?
Yes, most definitely. The pool that we use is both indoors as well as being heated. The reason for that is the conditions that we treat, most of them have a rather big elements of pain associated with it. So just the warmth itself, a general patient that is not even part of a hydrotherapy group, part of management at home, that would be a home exercise program, with most patients we include a heat therapy, which is just use of a heat pack to try and reduce pain. The heat itself increases circulation, and the circulation itself will allow for pain markers to be removed, and that allows the patients to do the exercises that they need to do. Now, as you say, water can be cold, person would be reluctant, but fortunately, the pool that we use is heated, and then that allows for that heat, or the heat eliminating or reducing to some extent the pain aspect to allow us to go into the different exercises that we do.
Mm-hmm. And the pools that you are using at the moment, because it's the Lanesia area, where exactly is it? Is it, you know, with the clinic? I've never been to the clinic really, so that's a question.
No, alhamdulillah, look, we went through quite a few pools, myself and Mr. Memi, the volunteer occupational therapist at Lanesia Clinic. We went around to quite a few pools trying to get somebody to give the pool on loan, because as it is a clinic, we don't charge any service fee, but we also need somebody that's willing to take in the amount of patients that we see. So it was quite a big ask we were asking for, but alhamdulillah, there's a pool next to Mikasa Flats. It's on the corner of Jewel Avenue and Azul Road in extension 13. It's at Swimfit Academy, owned by Firoza. Alhamdulillah, she allowed us use of her property. So we actually go there twice a month down. So it's approximately just short of 1 kilometer from the clinic. And that's also something that we needed. We needed something that is accessible by the patients. And if it's a Lanesia Clinic patient, then it needs to be close to Lanesia Clinic itself, as well as not being charged. So Firoz allowed us use of her pool. Her pool is covered. Her pool is also heated. So that access and those criteria were met by her. No cost, heated, covered, easy access, alhamdulillah. So twice a month, that's where we're going.
Okay. Just for the benefit of the listeners, so if you are a patient at the clinic, and you need to go to the pool, is it will transport then be available for them? Do they come to the clinic, and from the clinic do you transport your patients to the pool?
Unfortunately, we don't have any patient transports. It's something that we did look into, but it's actually a big ask from the clinic's point of view. But I mean, if I tell you to do a 900 meter walk, it's not that far. I mean, it's just less than a kilometer. It's a good warm up for the hydrotherapy. So if you're able to get to the clinic, then we hope that you're able to get to the hydrotherapy. And we do have some patients that do that. Unfortunately, because of transport issues, we have had patients walk from the clinic to the hydrotherapy. But alhamdulillah for them, it's just a greater benefit. So they get a warm up walk, maybe 30 minutes at most. Have a quick walk down to the pool, and then they join the class. So double therapy,
exercise included. Okay, the benefits of hydrotherapy.
Okay, so look, hydrotherapy has got quite a vast number of benefits. So the conditions that we will touch on, it's anything from muscular dystrophy, cerebral palsy, head injuries, neurological fallouts of patients, developmental disorders, sensory disorders, developmental delay that includes Down syndrome, low toe, and so on. But the more common ones is burn patients, so patients that have had burns, because we want to work on range, or scar tissue massage, on the hydrotherapy can assist there. Most joint injuries we can rehab it thoroughly within the hydrotherapy sessions. And then the most common would be arthritis, lower back pain. And then just in general, patients that are overweight, patients that have decreased endurance, all of these patients would naturally benefit from hydrotherapy.
Okay. But why do therapy in water? How does that work?
Yeah, well, there's it's quite a long one, but in... To put it as simply as we can, we use quite a specific concept, as we do with all our treatment or our management. It has to be research-based. We can't just treat a patient on hearsay. So the principle that we use, or the concept that we use, is the Hallowick concept. This basically allows the therapist to choose specific activities to achieve different aims in the water. To be as quick as I can, there's basically five principles that we use. So we got in the water, the physical properties of the water. You got the metacentric properties of the water. So what does that mean? It just naturally encourages a patient to rotate in the water. So when you're on land, you normally want to be static and you want to be still, whereas in the water you have a natural desire or inclination to give more, to do more rotational movements. And this is a problem that we often find with low back pain patients, that they don't want to rotate the trunk, the body. Now naturally in the water you have the, as I said, the inclination, the subtle desire to rotate. So that's one thing. The buoyancy, on the other hand, it's what keeps us afloat. Now, not only does it keep us afloat, but by elongating the body, it allows a subtle stretch. It also allows some resistance to movement, so a form of a resistance exercise. Also, the natural hydrostatic pressure, so actually the pressure that the water puts on the body, not only is it going to help with swelling, but it's also going to help increase the work of breathing. What does that mean? You take a deep breath, you need your lungs to expand, but now if the water is pushing against your body, then obviously your lungs have to push harder against the water then to take a breath, so increase work of breathing. So that's touching on the endurance patients. Then there are patients that are hypersensitive, you know, they just, you just touch them and they feel pain. So the water also has a good sensory effect on these patients. And then naturally the physiological factors, I think anybody can say when they jump in the pool after a swim, it's quite relaxing. So that's, we refer to that as the sympathetic nervous system. It reduces it, calms it, all of that sweating, increased heart rate, increased blood pressure. There's a myriad of things, sweating, pupil dilation, all of this kind of stuff comes in with the sympathetic nervous system, and now this reduces it, calms it down. So a natural relaxation effect. But that's a long, nice theoretical answer. But in short, in the pool, the patient is able to achieve more things than in the water than outside of the water. The amount of energy they feel they're using, because naturally they're having fun, so it doesn't feel like they're expending as much energy, but naturally they're expending a lot more energy. And then the lastly, control of the body. You need better muscle control in the water, because not only on land you're balancing your body weight, in the water you have the water pushing you from left to right, forward and backwards, so you have to have better muscle control. And you don't, this is the benefit, you don't realize that all of these elements are coming into play. So you do a lot more work in the water, and there's a lot less strain. As we said, the heat reduces the pain aspect of it. The buoyancy takes the weight off of the joints, so we can strengthen the muscles while not putting pressure on the joint. Because, I mean, if I tell a patient that has arthritis in the knees, do a bunch of squats, okay, fine, some benefit, we're increasing the muscle strength, but you're still having wear and tear on the joint because you have the body weight going through the joint. Whereas in the pool, there's no body weight on the joints, yet we are still increasing the muscle strength. So these are some of the aspects that we look at when treating patients in the pool hydrotherapy.
Okay, now we're going to take a short break right now. When we return, inshallah, I have a very important question to ask you. Stay with us. We'll be back in a few moments. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back to the program Family Health Matters. I'm your sister Zenith, and my guest today in the studio is the occupational therapist, Sister Nazreen Hassan. We also have the brother Mohammed Abubakar Reese with us, who is the physiotherapist, and we have the audiologist and speech therapist with us, Sister Raisa Mullah, and we also have a guest sitting in with us, Sister Melanie. She's also an occupational therapist, and I hope we'll have her with us on one of our programs soon, inshallah. Okay, we're talking about hydrotherapy. Now, before we go on, and I said I have a question for you, Brother Mohammed. It's with regards to hydrotherapy, obviously, but the thing is, going for all these therapies, do you need to know how to swim?
Very, very important question. But no, alhamdulillah, the pool that we've been given by Ferozabad Swim Fit Academy, it's about chest height. So if you want to Google sternum and increase your vocab, so sternum. So about chest height, that's exactly where the water is. I mean, it depends on your height. If you're a short person, then maybe by your neck. If you're a tall person, a bit lower. But it's, you don't need to swim, and we encourage all patients to come, regardless of whether you can swim or you can't swim. For the very nervous patients, we'll have a therapist with them. Also, for comfort's sake, we do generally allow each patient to bring one individual with them. So if it's maybe the wife is coming for therapy and she's nervous to get in the water, or that, and she wants to bring her husband, or the husband just wants to join in just for his own health's sake, then he joins in. So for those that are nervous and those that are not, we allow them to have one guest come in the pool with them. But no, there's no need. We don't do anything where you're swimming. It's purely exercise in the water.
Okay. So how does the hydrotherapy fit into the support community-based rehab?
Okay, so in the community setting, the hydrotherapy was used as both as a promotive as well as a preventative program. So promoting health, that would be for like the guests, just encouraging them to be healthy. Preventative, we want to prevent worsening of conditions or another condition forming on top of another. So in other words, an individual has arthritis of the knee, so they start limping, and because they start limping, then they get hip problems. So that's how we're going to be preventing stuff. But in general, for those other medical individuals out there, we basically use five principles real quick: human orientation, participation, empowerment, ownership, and then as well as release. Those basically just mean, in short, we're making the patients aware of what can be done. We're saying, look, there's something like hydrotherapy. We get them to buy into the idea and join into the classes. Once they've joined in, slowly they're learning the principles of our treatment, what it is that we're doing, what it is that we choose to do specific exercises, and how it benefits them. Then later on, this develops the patients themselves, their own knowledge, and then they are able to start running the class with our supervision. And then we then allow them to start taking the ownership aspect, where they make some decisions on the class activities, and to such point that it gets self-run. For an example, we have a back class, and that's a self-run back class, and therapists just come in maybe on a monthly basis or so, just to monitor the groups. So this is, from a community point of view, this is what we're trying to do. We're trying to take patients that are struggling with similar issues, empower them, give them the knowledge and the understanding to run a group so that they benefit themselves and others. And as they have the knowledge, new individuals can come in and just learn from the patients that already know, and then become self-run, because we can't have a therapist everywhere. So we're trying to empower the community to do things themselves. And then they can take this out and go to other pools and run it in different parts of the nation. That's the point, to try and allow the community to be self-sustainable as such, even from a medical point of view.
Okay, so can anyone join the hydrotherapy?
Yes, most definitely. There's some obvious things, like if a patient has an unstable medical condition, we either won't allow or we need to give extra supervision. For severe patients, we don't have any at the moment, but maybe a stroke patient that's got a certain issue with the mouth and they're not able to swallow even thin liquids, that's a bit of a danger, because if you can't swallow the water, you can now then choke on it and so on. And then obviously incontinence, if you're unable to hold, to control your bladder or bowel, in the water, hydrotherapy is not really going to work. But anybody can join, and those that are not from the clinic themselves that are interested, as you mentioned, healthy hearts, think about your heart. Firoza has her own aquatic classes, so they can even join the Swimfit Academy. They don't have to join through us. They don't have to be part of the clinic group. She has also just general health groups that they can join.
Okay. A question, it's with regards a person suffering from had a knee replacement, and also people with hip replacement. Is hydrotherapy, a treatment for them?
It is a form of treatment. It's a brilliant, it's a good idea, because for them, they have certain restrictions. So we'll monitor that. Depends how recent the replacement was. That talks about how much weight they can put on it, what movement they can do with their leg. All of this comes into play. So we monitor that, but progress them. So for a patient that can't walk at all because they're swimming out, or not can't walk at all, they're struggling to walk in the pool, it becomes easier. We start walking then we progress it out of the pool. But yes, hydrotherapy will be a brilliant idea for them.
Okay. Okay, so and hydrotherapy, is it done, I think you mentioned earlier, but I'm not sure how often is it done?
So we do it twice a month.
Twice a month.
At the Swimfit Academy. You can't just rock up there. You would have to come by the clinic, by our department. Mm-hmm. But it's from 2 to 3 o'clock in the afternoon, twice a month we run the classes. And there's no fee, there's no charge. Like I said, it's the clinic's initiative.
Well, thank you so much for sharing all that information with us, Brother Mohammed Abu Bakaris.
Okay.
And I'm sure if they want to, I'm sure you'll be able to give us the number for Sister Firoza, for especially, we can always take it on later. Anyway, but thank you so much. But I'm going to speak to our occupational therapist now, Sister Nazreen Hassan. Assalamu alaikum, Nazreen. Jazakallah khair for joining us. It's nice to have you with us. It's been a while.
Walaikum salam. It has been, and it appears that we'll have to rush a bit because Muhammad Abu Bakr has taken up the lion's share of the time.
No, that's fine. Don't worry. That's you know, as long as we get information across to our listeners, I'm sure they do appreciate it.
Definitely.
And yes, so today we want to talk a little about cerebral palsy. What exactly is it, Nancy?
Okay, cerebral palsy is considered a neurological disorder,
mm-hmm.
and it's caused by a non-progressive brain injury or malformation that occurs when the child's brain is under development. So just to take note as well, that cerebral palsy is a permanent disability. It's not contagious at all, so you can't catch it, and it's also non-progressive, which means that it doesn't get worse. Cerebral palsy is actually also caused by brain damage. So the brain damage is caused by brain injury or abnormal development of the brain that occurs while a child's brain is still developing. That could be before birth, during birth, or immediately after birth.
So that's just to do with the brain, basically.
Yes.
Okay. And is that lack of oxygen to the brain?
It could be from a variety of reasons. One of them could be a lack of oxygen to the brain. One of them could be due to something going wrong at the delivery where there's a structural damage to the head and the brain after that. It could also be due to an accident after birth. Sometimes if the baby falls on their head or there's a near drowning incident, it could be due to any of those.
Okay, so, and this happens only, from birth, actually.
It could happen before birth, during birth, it could happen after birth as well. It could happen at any point in time during those three.
And there's no real cause besides like what you've mentioned now.
There's no real specific cause that would result in cerebral palsy, except for taking note that it is damage to the brain, which could occur, you know, during birth, before birth, or after birth.
Okay, now, we mentioned one, lack of oxygen, but why do you have lack of oxygen? How does this happen? You know, lack of oxygen for some reason or the other?
I think sometimes that, when the baby is born, there is a reason, maybe due to an infection or due to something covering the baby's mouth or nose, where the baby then doesn't get enough oxygen in. And that can then cause damage to the brain as well. But I'm not an obstetrician or gynecologist, so I would say, refer to an obstetrician or gynecologist or a doctor to explain those further.
Yes, yeah. I know. The reason I'm asking that is because, I mean, parents, when this happens, it's really traumatic, and they're always looking for answers. Why did this happen to my child?
It's unfortunate, and if you take a proper medical history, there sometimes is a link that you can make that would possibly explain the brain damage. But unless, it's addressed very early and picked up very early, sometimes that link, if left too long, you can't make that link.
Mm.
So I think having, doctors who are conscientious during birth, having a mom who takes care of herself, while she is pregnant, looking at the birthing process as well, having proper medical history, medical notes taken down, and then also taking note, like we've spoken about before, developmental delays, taking note after birth whether there is a developmental delay and early identification as well. So being very aware and educating yourself with regard to the milestones of your baby and what is normal for your baby after birth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think it's very important, from a very young age as parents to be very alert and aware of everything. Even if you think there may be something wrong, you'd rather have it seen to.
Definitely.
Than waiting and, hoping that, no, this will come right.
You'd rather err on the side of caution.
Mm. Okay, yeah. So what do children who are affected with cerebral palsy present with?
Okay, so the symptoms of cerebral palsy are that it affects body movement, it affects the way you control your muscles, your coordination of the muscles, it affects the tone in your body as well, your reflexes, your posture, your balance, and it can also impact on fine motor skills, which we've spoken about, I think, previously on previous shows, your gross motor skills, which are your large movements, and also your oral motor functioning. The type of movement dysfunction, okay, so the type of movement dysfunction, the location of the dysfunction and the number of limbs that are involved as well as to the extent of impairment will vary from one individual to another. No two children or with cerebral palsy are the same. They might not present in the same manner. It can also affect the arms, legs, and even the face as well. So it can affect one limb or, you know, several or all as well. CP also affects muscles and a person's ability to control them. So the muscles can contract too much, which makes the child stiff. They can contract too little, which makes the child then very floppy. Or they can, you know, all at the same time. So limbs can be stiff and forced into painful, awkward positions. And you can also get what we call fluctuating muscle contractions, which can make limbs tremble, shake, or writhe. So you have a lot of motor dysfunction with a child with cerebral palsy, and it impacts greatly on the ability to move. Balance, posture, and coordination can also be affected by cerebral palsy. And then your tasks such as walking, sitting, or tying shoes may be difficult for some, while others might have difficulty grasping objects, for example. You also get other complications such as intellectual impairment, seizures, and vision or hearing impairment also accompany cerebral palsy.
And I guess sometimes these things still continues. You may think it's fine now, it's managing the condition, and then after a while something else comes up, which could also then, like I said, I think this is something that no parent would want their child to go through.
Yes.
But also, I think it's so important, like you mentioned earlier, the importance of picking up these conditions at a very early age. So for parents, no matter how normal your baby look, you need to always be aware and alert of anything that may, and I think as a mother, we're so instinctive. We know exactly what's happening. So if you feel there's anything wrong with your child, pick it up, go to the doctor and have it seen to.
Definitely.
And don't give up. I think sometimes, you know, even doctors sometimes would overlook it and think like, you know, you're just overreacting.
That's very true.
If it's something that is bothering you, I think a mother is one of the best people to be able to tell you that there's something wrong with your child or not. Not to waste time and get as much help as you possibly can. Now, how do you help children achieve the most functional position that they can to ensure that they can carry out the activities of daily living? And just before you do that, this I think you mentioned earlier, I may not have caught it properly, but you did mention that this is something for life. If there is a problem, it's there for life, but you can learn to manage it, if it's possible, yeah.
It is there for life, and a lot of the patients that we see at the clinic, we do try and manage, so we try and prevent any further disability. And I'm going to talk about one aspect of functionality, which is buggy seating. We run programs, or seating clinics, should I rather say, where we seat quite a few children over a couple of days. We seat approximately up to 20 to 30 kids over a couple of days, and all of our therapists then are involved from Joburg Metro District. The buggies, they look like a pram, but they have a very hard back, a very hard base where the child sits in, and they've got lots of supporting sponges around. And what we do is we assess the child to see where the disability is and how we need to prevent any further disability. And then we measure them and we cut out the sponge in a certain way to accommodate the disability and to prevent further disability as well. In terms of improving functionality of the client, the patient, once they're in this buggy, they're sitting a lot better. Their posture is improved. They have a tray table in front of them. And also it prevents further disability. So it prevents the posture from worsening. And once they're in there, they're able to actually do more functional activities. So they're able to make eye contact better. And Risa will tell you quickly about feeding.
So what we've found is that when the kids are in the buggies, it assists a lot with positioning, like Nazreen said. So when we're doing feeding, it helps a lot, because often when these kids are in either the floppy state or in that stiff state, it becomes very difficult to feed. So the mums try and feed the kids, and half of the time the food is not really being digested and their child is not really eating. So when they're in the buggy in that optimal positioning, it helps with that structure. It creates that structure where they have meal times. The moms know, okay, we're going to feed this way, suited according to their child. So when I do, like if I have to do feeding, I prefer that the child is in a buggy. So buggies are very important for us. Also, like Ms. Dean said, when they're in that buggy, they have a desk in front of them, a day table. Mm. So it allows for a lot of interaction to occur because moms can actually sit and talk to their children or even just play with them. So they can put something on that day table. It becomes a lot more interactive. Even feeding, it becomes interactive. It's not a very negative situation for the child. So we really do like when the kids are in the buggies. Mm. So what Nizreen and him have been doing is quite amazing because they've been seating a lot of kids in like short spans of time, but it helps in the long run.
Okay.
And just to let you know as well that the kids are able to breathe better once they're sitting in that upright position. And before I end, I just wanted to let you know that what happens is when the community service therapists come into Joburg Metro District, we get our permanent therapists who have been involved in seating for quite a number of years to train them. So we're imparting the skills and knowledge to our community service therapists who then learn how to seat the children. So when they leave at the end of the year, they're leaving with all the skills and knowledge to be able to seat the children. And there's nothing more rewarding than, you know, once you've seated the child properly in the buggy and the child smiles and the mom smiles, there's nothing more rewarding than that.
Sure. Anyway, Lisa, we don't have much time. Sorry for that. Maybe we'll get you on next time to do the start of the program. In any way, tell us more about the outreach programs.
Okay, so an outreach is an activity in which we provide services to a population that is possibly unable to accept services in our base clinic. So Lanesha Clinic would be where we are based, but we do outreaches to different clinics in our area. Okay, so for the different outreaches that we do, we'd go to our local authority clinics. That would be your Lanesha Civic Center or Eldorado Park Extension 2 Clinic. We also go to the provincial clinic, which is in Cliptown. So these clinics allow us to provide services to patients in those areas that are unable to come to Lanesha Clinic, because it might be a bit difficult for them due to either transportation, financial difficulties, or even due to their condition.
What do you do at these are there any specific activities that you do there?
Okay, so when we go on these outreaches, we don't usually go alone. So when we do the Civic Center in Lanesha Clinic, myself and Melanie's have been doing it this year, we do screenings. So it's a quick thing where we do a developmental talk to the moms just so that they're aware, and if they are concerned, or even if they're not concerned, we usually just tell them, come in 5-10 minutes, we are going to ask you a few questions, we just want to see if everything's okay, and then we'd screen them. And if we need to refer them back to the Lanesha Clinic, we'll do it that way, or if we need to refer out, we'll write referral letters, or on the spot we tell the moms, these are things you can do in the meantime. We'll be here next month on this date. Come in, tell us if it's improved, or if you want to maybe try something else. Then we'd also go to Eldorado Park Extension 2 Clinic and Cliptown Clinic. That would be Mohammed Abubakar and Nazreen. So they are there at the clinic. They'd also provide services. So Abu would see the patient, he'd do an assessment, and he'd provide management. I go to Eldorado Park in Cliptown, but I don't go as often as them. So we have specific dates in which I would go. And then Veronica, which is our OTT, she would book speech patients on that day so that they know that the speech therapist is coming on that day, and they'd have patients booked for me. So that's how we do it. We also go to our NGOs, so those are your non-governmental organizations. We at Harvey Cohen, which is at Eldorado Park, as well as we go to JISWA, the mental health unit. So what we do there is we do a needs analysis. We see how can we assist the center itself. What do they need from us in terms of us developing programs, schedules? Maybe if a child needs a buggy, we'd see, okay, they need to be referred to Lanesha Clinic. Or if they need like workshops, or if they're not sure how to feed, I do a workshop on feeding, or those kind of things. We do a lot of workshops with the NGOs. And also the same thing at JISWA. Needs analysis, we see how we can help. We go in, we do programs, we set a structure for them, but with the teachers. It's not just us going in, doing the workshop. We try and make it very sustainable so that they can carry those things on if for some reason we're no longer there, or if that service stops.
Yeah. Alhamdulillah. Well, unfortunately, we've come to the end of our program today, but just for the benefit of our listeners again, those contact details for us, please.
Okay, so it's we have a cell phone number. It's 078-906-4000. 5308. You can phone us on that number. It does link directly to us. However, if we are busy with patients, what happens is that we might not answer. So you can send an SMS and then we will reply back to you, or we might phone you if we need to ask you a few more things. And then for SwimFit Academy, which is in where we draw hydro, the number is 011-852-5353.
Okay. So I'm sure I'll just repeat that numbers again. The Lanesia Clinic number is 078-906-5308, and you can SMS on that number too. Simply because you may just be busy at that time.
So you just SMS your name, how can we help you, and we will either phone you or SMS you back with an appointment.
Okay, jazakallah. And also the SwimFit Academy, the number is 011-852-5353. And it was Sister Firoza.
Okay,
so there you can speak to Sister Firoza. Okay, jazakallah khair. Okay, we are jazakallah khair. It's time for the news and they're ready to barge in. Yeah. Assalamu alaikum. Thank you so much for joining us today. We hope to have you with us next month, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.